Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Dairy on the Air. I'm farm broadcaster Andy Vance, and I'll be your host for today's discussion brought to you by Midwest Dairy. Today, I'm with guest Dr. Frank Mitlerner, a professor and air quality extension specialist in the Department of Animal Science at the University of California, Davis. Dr. Mitlerner conducts research in the area of air quality related to livestock production and environmental research focusing on the effects of air emissions on animal health. Professor is committed to focusing on science as a foundation of the climate change discussion. And he's here today to discuss cattle and their specific impact on the environment, and maybe some of the myths that he encounters out there fighting the good fight in the social media space and talking to audiences about the impact of cattle production on the environment. So, Professor, let's start with a bit of background. Tell us who you are and your basic line of inquiry and research in your lab.
Yeah, so I am an investigator in the area of environmental impacts of livestock. So first, I quantify the impacts livestock has on the environment. And secondly, I find ways to further reduce those impacts. And I have a pretty large lab with anywhere between 20 to 30 people. And we always have plenty to do.
How did you get into this field of research? What was it that interested you or got you involved in this concept to begin with?
Yeah, so about 30 years ago or so, I did my master's in agriculture engineering back in Germany, and I traveled extensively worldwide and saw that cattle production, let's say, in South America can have quite some environmental impact. So I did my master's thesis in Paraguay, the heart of South America, and studied the environmental footprint of cattle. And then later did my PhD in Lubbock, Texas at Texas Tech University, studying the impacts of feedlot cattle on the environment, particularly dust. And then later went to California, where I started my faculty position in 2002. And California, of course, because that's where the cows are. You know, we have 20% of the U.S. cows, dairy cows, and the environmental footprint, again, is considerable. And people are wondering, how can we optimize our environmental performance? So throughout the world, I always looked at where are the cattle, and that's where I ended up.
So if you were going to boil down your research on emissions from the cattle space, dairy cattle in particular, what's one thing you would like them to know?
So in the past, the focus was mainly on impacts of cattle production on water quality, groundwater, let's say nitrate or so. And that focus then moved more into air pollutants. Those pollutants that affect air quality, and California was really the first one in this sphere, looking at so-called volatile organic compounds. These are compounds that form smog. Okay, and when I started back in 2002, the notion was out in the newspapers that cows rival cars as smog producers, and that was an unbelievable claim. And I found very quickly that it was a fake one, a false one, and I found ways to rectify that, and very quickly, it was clear that cows never rival cars as smog producers, and that the notion is ridiculous. Much like the notion that cows rival cars as greenhouse gas emitter, and that's the notion that you see everywhere today.
Why do you think the public believes the dairy industry has been this contributor to greenhouse gas emissions? What's the underlying misconception there? Where does it come from?
So I think we have to be very careful to say that it's the public that is under the perception. It is not the public. It is a very vocal minority that claims to be the public. And that's a large difference. So what we see here is that a activist minority claims to be a major movement. The media buys onto it and portrays it as such, saying that, oh, the public, by and large, 40 or so percent now wants to go vegan, is against modern agriculture and so on. That is not the case. The overarching majority or the overwhelming majority of Americans loves the taste and the feel of animal-sourced foods, whether it's an egg in the morning or egg and bacon or whether it's cheese and milk and or the barbecue over the weekend. Take that away from the average Americans and you'll have a fight on your hands. And I can assure you that.
When you look at the data that you've collected and the research you've done in your lab, what does the data actually say about the role the dairy industry plays in this greenhouse gas emission climate discussion?
So first, the big picture. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, keeps tabs of which sector of society emits how much, for example, greenhouse gases. And they are very clear that there are three sectors of society emitting 80%, that's 80, of all greenhouse gases. And that is the sectors of transportation, power production and use, and then certain industries, such as the cement industry. These three combined, again, transportation, power production, and the cement industry, these three combined emit 80% of all greenhouse gases in the United States. The livestock sector, and that's all species combined, including the feed sector, according to the EPA, emits approximately 4% of all greenhouse gases. So certainly much, much less than the 80% 800-pound gorilla. But there are people out there who claim that there's nothing worse, environmentally more detrimental than the livestock sector. That clearly is not supported by fact. It's not supported by science. Now, the dairy sector in particular has been the front runner with respect to identifying what their environmental footprint is. They conducted what's called a life cycle assessment, which is a cradle-to-grave assessment of the environmental impacts, meaning anything from using fertilizers to us putting the milk or cheese into our mouths. The entire life cycle of that product is assessed for air quality, water quality, greenhouse gases. And when these studies were conducted, we found that the entire dairy sector from A through Z combined emits 2.2% of all greenhouse gases in the United States. That's not nothing, it's something. But it's certainly not what these people who I talked about earlier depict this industry to be. And not just do we know what the impacts are, and this has all been peer-reviewed and published, it's in the scientific literature. Not just do we know what these impacts are, but the dairy sector, unlike most other sectors in this country, has further reduction goals. Nationwide, that reduction goal is 25%. In California, the state where I reside, it's 40%. 40% to be achieved by 2030. So that's a mere 11 years from now, that they want to reduce greenhouse gases by 40%. And what is most staggering is that of the 40%, California dairies have already reached 25. So we're over halfway there. So I want to ask you, I want to challenge you to show me one other industry in this country that has achieved such reduction goals.
What have you observed, and what's been the response to some of your efforts to try to point out to folks online and other places that you're conflating U.S. versus global data?
Yeah, so back in 2006, there was a global report that said that all livestock worldwide emits 18% of all greenhouse gases. And it went on as saying, and that's more than the entire global transportation sector. I rebutted that and I showed them where they were wrong. And they admitted and agreed with my criticism. They took that comparison down because they agreed that it was incorrect, did another life cycle assessment for global livestock and found it was not 18, it was 14%. But more importantly, they completely concurred with me that this global number must not be used in individual countries or in individual regions within countries. Why? If you look at global livestock, you will find that a country like the U.S., our livestock here emits about 4%. In a country like Paraguay, in the heart of South America, it's 50% because they have twice as many cattle as they have people. You go further, and you will find that a country like Ethiopia, which has a lot of livestock, but very little industries, very little transportation, and so on, their livestock emits 90%. So now you take 200 countries globally and form an average, and that average looks much higher than those numbers from the best achiever, like the United States. So using a global average in for a country like ours is incorrect, not just for the United States, it's also incorrect for a country like Paraguay or Ethiopia. Global numbers are just that, a global average. They are not suitable to depict what's going on in individual regions. But now comes the point. Our critics, the critics of animal agriculture, use global numbers because they are higher and because that is a story to tell. If you can tell your listeners or viewers that the livestock sector emits more greenhouse gases than all transportation, then you have a story.
Yeah. That's a
but in the United States, that is absolutely incorrect. They know it's incorrect, and they decide to go with it and run with it. And most people are confused. So again, just for your listeners here, globally, livestock emits 14.5% of all greenhouse gases. In the United States, all of livestock combined emits 4%, and the dairy sector alone about half of that. Okay, so remember, the dairy sector emits about 2%. That's not nothing, it's something, but I think everybody would agree this is not rivaling cars, trucks, trains, planes, ships, power plants, and so on.
What about global cooling? Is there a discussion to be had there? How do we maybe turn back the tide of global warming, if you will, and what's agriculture's role in that?
So I would say that the vast majority of scientists will tell you that climate change is real. Okay, not just that climate change is real, but that human activity has something to do with it. It is absolutely true that climate change has always taken place. We have always gone through phases of heating and cooling throughout world's history. That is not unusual. We have gone through ice ages, we've gone through heating ages, and so on. That is not unusual. What is unusual and has been over the last few decades, the last five or so decades, what is unusual is that the heating trend that we have seen since has left the normal range. Okay, we are no longer in the normal heating range, the normal max range, but we have exceeded that. And as a result, we see various regions throughout the world showing anomalies that are distinct. So for example, when I take a look at satellite images, which I do for a living, and I look at Russia, I look at Siberia, then areas that are vast and previously were frozen and as a result kept methane in the ground are now thawing, releasing vast quantities of that gas. We can see it from space. We can see very large differences and changes happening in West Africa. We see them happening in South America. We see them happening at the poles. And in all of these instances, we see vast amount of greenhouse gases going off that previously were trapped in the ground. We also see weather extremes of unprecedented magnitudes. I have news for the farming communities in this country, and that is you personally might not believe that this is true. You might think that this is some kind of a political game or so. The vast majority of society does not agree with you, and they want to have food products that take that issue of climate change into consideration. And that puts a burden onto your shoulders. Whether you politically believe in it or not, it becomes your topic. So if McDonald's says, we only source sustainable beef from now on, or we only want to have dairy products with a low carbon intensity, then want it or not, it becomes your topic.
From a dairy farmer's perspective, what are the things you think the dairy farmer can do, should be doing to meet that challenge or to take up that burden, so to speak?
I think unlike any other industry, the dairy industry has already been incredibly proactive, but you have been so good in hiding it, in hiding your progress. You must be open about it. I'll give you an example. Back in 1950, we had 25 million dairy cows in this country. 25. Today we have 9. We went from 25 to 9 million dairy cows, but with this much smaller herd today, we are producing 60% more milk. We have shrunk the carbon footprint of a glass of milk in this country by 2/3 between 1950 and today. We have seen changes here in the dairy sector that are astounding. We are the envy of the world. But for whatever reason, we are painfully quiet about it. Efficiencies in livestock production are directly related to pollution. The more efficient your cows, not just your cars, also your cows, the lower is your environmental footprint. And as a dairy farmer, the best way you can explain production efficiency is by taking the normal regular consumer to a car analogy. Just ask them, if you compare the fuel efficiency of a car that you drive today to that of your parents or grandparents, then of course you know that your car today is more fuel efficient, maybe twice as fuel efficient as those cars from your parent and grandparent generation. The greater fuel efficiency means you need less gas to get from A to B. If you need less gas, you have lower emissions, less pollution. The same is true for our cows. And, you know, going from 25 million cows to 9 million cows means you need much less land to grow feed. You need much less water to grow that feed and or to water the cows. You have much fewer animals that can belch out methane, that produce manure. Think about the difference in the amount of manure between a 25 versus a 9 million dairy cow herd. And just a last reference point, I sometimes ask my audiences, after I tell them that we have 9 million dairy cows today, how many horses they think we have in the United States? Nobody knows. 9.5 million horses. We have more horses in this country than we have dairy cows. And of course, they are not ruminants, you know, so there are different amounts of methane and so on. But I just give people that number because they are unaware how small our herd has become. And it's not just true for dairy. Our pork herd has tripled over the last 60 years with the same inputs. Our poultry production has drastically improved. Drastically improved. Our beef herd went from 140 million to now 90 million. But we are producing the same amount of beef with 50 million fewer cattle. So it's definitely a success story for dairy, and dairy is leading the way. But our entire livestock sector has undergone changes that are remarkable. And for whatever reason, we are awfully quiet about this.
When you look at the research and we think about that goal you talked about earlier, that we're reducing emissions by a further 40%, let's say in California as an example, what are some of the solutions that you see based on the data that we can do to further reduce emissions? Where can we have the most impact in that regard?
So all emissions, whether it's greenhouse gases or others, let's say groundwater pollutants, surface water pollutants, any kind of pollutants on a dairy, on a livestock operation, all of these stem from applying nutrients to crops at rates that exceed the crop's ability to take those nutrients on. If you overapply manure to crops, then whatever you overapply goes either down and affects the water, or goes up and affects the air or the climate. So I think one of the most important considerations is apply your manure to crops at the time that there are crops on the field and at the time when these crops are ready to take those nutrients on. Because if you apply at non-agronomic rates, those nutrients will affect the environment. There's just no doubt about that. So we have learned to use all different kinds of technologies to optimize manure storage and treatment. We know what kind of nutrient uptake our crops are capable of. Sometimes we should increase the use of technical experts, extension specialists, extension farm advisors, co-op specialists, and so on. We should increase the use of those specialists because we have figured out most of this decades ago. The question is, how well do we adopt that knowledge to practice? And we certainly know a lot about how to minimize emissions today. Not just can we reduce emissions from manure, we can even reduce emissions from things such as belching. That's called enteric emissions. That's what it's called, okay? It's the number one source of greenhouse gases from agriculture, the belching from cows. I know this sounds weird, but that's the way it is. The stomach of the cow, the first one, the rumen, has a volume of 50 gallons. That's the, you know, a volume of a bathtub. And that thing produces a lot of gas. We are currently studying feed additives that you can feed to a cow that can, in a major way, reduce unwanted methane losses. That's not just good for the environment, but it's also good for your pocketbook, because methane losses are net energy losses. You lose about 10% of the energy that you feed to a cow through methane. So we are studying ways of reducing, of minimizing that methane loss, which is good for the environment, but also for your pocketbook.
So how worried should we, as producers, as a consumer, either place, how worried should we be about methane?
Methane is the Achilles heel of animal agriculture. And that's why what I'm about to say is so important. There are three main greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, you and I are exhaling it right now, then methane, and a third one called nitrous oxide. These three greenhouse gases are the ones that are most often discussed. They differ with respect to how well these gases can trap heat from solar radiation. When the sun hits us here on Earth, the sun also hits these greenhouse gases. And these molecules have the ability to trap that heat from the sun, literally. And methane traps that heat 28 times better than CO2. That's why everybody's talking about methane, because it's so potent to trap heat from the sun. So methane is 28 times more potent than CO2 in trapping heat from the sun. That's true. But what's also true and most often overlooked is the fact that while CO2 has a lifespan of 1,000 years, methane has a lifespan of 10 years. So the one is a long-lived climate pollutant, and that really means any kind of CO2 we have ever put into the atmosphere through any of our activities is still there. If you go into your car tomorrow and you drive from A to B, you add new CO2 to the atmosphere. You do the same thing 2 days from today, and then 3 days from today, and so on. Every time you drive your car, you add additional CO2 to the atmosphere. That's different for methane, because methane is not just formed, or we call that emitted, but it's also destroyed, and destroyed at a very high rate through a process called oxidation. There's something in the air, and that's called a radical. That radical, once it meets a methane molecule, destroys that methane molecule, and that happens within 10 years. This is really, really important. This is not just some professor's, you know, whatever, chemistry 101 talk. This is critically important for animal agriculture, because what I'm saying here is that roughly the amount of methane that's being destroyed every year, globally and nationally and regionally, the amount of methane that's being produced almost equals the amount of methane that's being destroyed. Those critics of animal agriculture leave out the destruction part of the equation. But this is actually a budget we are talking about, with emissions on the one hand and destruction on the other hand. This is really important. If you were a dairyman, and you were a dairyman, let's say, for 50 years, then it's true that your cows emitted new methane in the first 10 years of your dairy's existence. After the first 10 years, because of the lifespan of that gas, the amount of methane that you produced with your cows every year equals the amount of methane that's being destroyed. If a livestock herd in the United States or wherever remains constant in size, if you don't add additional cows, then you do not add additional methane. If you don't add additional methane, you are not adding additional warming. This discussion will be with us for the next few years. I will meet a lot of resistance, but I can tell you, we have already first grade scientific papers out there, and these papers will drive public policy. Farmers need to understand what I just said, that methane is not just more potent, but it's also much more short-lived, and that's a blessing for us.
If you're talking directly to a farmer and the farmer says, Frank, what can I do with regard to methane? Are there things they can do now, or are there things they should be watching coming down the line in the next few years that they could do to help reduce the volume of methane that their cows are emitting?
So with respect to enteric emissions, meaning the belching, there are several lines of investigation happening right now, meaning we are doing research to identify feed additives that reduce methane, and we are successful. But all of these technologies are in the research stages. They are not on the shelf yet. You, the dairyman, cannot buy them yet. Some of them have to undergo FDA approval and so forth. So there are very rigorous processes in countries like ours to assure that any kind of technology that enters our food supply is safe. And that takes time. Like it or not, it takes time. So on the enteric side, it will take, I think, about 5 years for us to have things on the shelf. But 5 years from now, I think that we will have technologies that will reduce our methane, enteric methane, by 30, 40%. And that's huge. Today, we have technologies, however, that can reduce methane from our manure streams. So, for example, effective solid separation will reduce methane generation. So if you are capable of taking what we call volatile solids out of the stream through proper screen separators or so-called weeping walls, by the way, which are very effective. I've seen several now in California that are extremely effective, reducing up to 80% of solids, 80. If you manage to separate those solids from the liquids and keep them out of the lagoon, you will drastically reduce methane from stored manure.
What would, in Frank's world, a sustainable food system look like? What does that mean for the dairy industry? And is there a possible future where we can say, boy, this dairy industry really is a keystone to a sustainable food system?
So first of all, just a few words on sustainability. I think every dairy farmer in the country would buy into the concept of being a steward of the land, right? And what does that mean to be a steward of the land? That means that you take very good care of the animals that you are guarding over, that you ensure that the land that you operate on is not harmed in any way, because guess what? You want to pass that on to your next generation. Your kids are waiting to take that dairy over. So, of course, you want to be the best possible steward of that land. Another word for that is sustainability. Could you please, and I mean the dairy farmers of this country, not say, oh, I'm tired of sustainability. This is your word. You should own it. Just because somebody is pivoting it in a way that you don't like doesn't mean that this is not your word. It is your word. Nobody knows more about how to be the best steward of the land than you. Nobody knows more about the animals that you have custody over than you. Nobody has their welfare, their health and welfare in mind more than you do. Nobody. The same is true for your land. The same is true for the quality of the product you produce. And the same is true for the workers you have employed and you wish to continue to have. So sustainability really includes not just environmental issues, but it includes, secondly, animal welfare. Thirdly, the workers. Fourthly, the food safety. And then, of course, also financial viability. These five sectors are pivotal to sustainability of the dairy sector. So in all these areas, dairy has to and already has been leading. And the issue is that we allow some extremists out there to claim that the opposite is true. They take some video clips from some extreme instances, and they put them together and they show it to our millennials and to our Generation Z and depict it as if that were normal. Animals being mishandled, environmental issues, and so on. They have understood how to master the science of depicting dairy in the worst possible colors. And if you ask a dairyman as a 20-year-old, whether it's true that there are antibiotics in the milk or that there's pus in the milk or, you know, that animals are mistreated or so, and whether they are willing to be, interviewed. Many farmers say, no, I'm not willing to be interviewed. But these 20-year-olds are really interested in this and they won't stop asking questions. If you don't answer them, believe me, your special friends will. Who knows better whether or not your milk is safe? Who knows better that every bulk tank coming from your dairy going to a creamery is checked for antibiotics, is checked for somatic cell counts, and so on? Who knows better how you treat your animals from calves all the way to cows that go to the packing plant? Who knows that better than you? Who is more of an expert about that than you? You need to stop being shy about it. You don't need to be, you know, a distinct expert in the field to just tell people what you do and why.
If I eat less dairy products, am I helping the planet?
So just to give you an overarching perspective of what our food supply in the United States does to global greenhouse gases. So if you think of all greenhouse gases in the world from human activity combined, then the United States is responsible to for 12%. 12% of all global greenhouse gases are caused by United States activities. 11 of the 12% stems from fossil fuel use. That's oil, coal, and gas. And that's transportation, power production, and cement industry. 11 of the 12 global percent stem from American, from US fossil fuel use. And 1% of all global greenhouse gases stem from our food supply chain in the United States. And half of that is animal agriculture. 0.5% of all global greenhouse gases stem from anything, everything animal agriculture that we produce in this country. So if we were to go totally meatless in this country, then we would reduce the carbon footprint of the world by such a small extent that it's not measurable. Those people who make this into a big story, make it into a big story because there's a lot of money to be made. And it's that simple. Does our food production system have an impact? It does. But there are certain parts of it that by far exceed, let's say, the contribution of beef or dairy or others. And that number one negative environmental component of our food supply chain is the food we waste. In the United States today, we waste 40%, 40, of all food we grow. That's animal and plant agriculture. We waste 40% of all food we grow. By the way, not just in the US we waste 40%, but globally we do. And that means all of the efforts, all of the nutrients, everything that goes into growing food, 40% of it, is in vain. It's a huge loss, and I think everybody would agree, regardless of what their political convictions are or their attitudes to what we should eat, everybody should be on board of making that a primary objective of reducing that tremendous waste. That by far is the most detrimental part of our food supply chain in this country and globally. One thing is very important to emphasize here, and that is that animal agriculture and plant agriculture are and always have been a symbiotic relationship. The nutrients that come out of our animals are the nutrients needed to grow the crops. Some of the crops that we grow will go back as feed into our animals. It is a cycle. It is a nutrient cycle that has been with us for a very long time, and it will continue to be that way.
Frank, this has been a really enlightening discussion. The passion that you have for the topic is infectious, and I hope our listeners have really gained some additional perspective on why they play an important role in this climate change discussion, in this environmental sustainability discussion. I want to thank Dr. Frank Mitlerner for joining us for an important conversation on dairy's true impact on the environment around us. We know as farmers that environmental sustainability and the impact that greenhouse gases have on the environment are topics that we're hearing more and more about. And so it was extremely helpful to look at the science and to take a closer look at what our industry is focusing on in terms of its overall commitment to environmental stewardship. It's a complex topic, and I appreciate the opportunity to learn more about how dairy can be part of the sustainable future in our food system. In closing, I'm farm broadcaster Andy Vance, hosting Midwest Dairy's Dairy on the Air podcast. For you, the listener, thanks for joining us. If you want to learn more about the various issues affecting your dairy industry, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platforms, including Stitcher, Spotify, and iTunes. Or you can always visit our website, midwestdairy.com, for future episodes. Until next time, have a great day.